one way or another. Our time has come.
Yeah, we're all going to be just professional podcasters. You're going to make tons of money. You don't have to do anything but talk into a microphone.
Look, you motherfuckers, I don't want a tea public, and I don't want a throne. I do this shit because I love it.
WFOD begins now.
The Dub Fod. My name is Mike. I am joined by my good friend, the king of pranks, the albino alligator, popcorn bitch, jaguar impressive, Coach T, the Duke of Denim, Mr. Travis Hulse. Hi, Travis.
Afternoon. Hello.
The phone number to contact the show is 636-487-HAND or WFOD show on Skype. And Travis, we have quite a treat for the people. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to be talking to Stu Shostak, Travis. And he's an internet radio man. He's a television historian. Looking forward to talking to him. I think that he's responsible for things still existing. You know, because like what they used to do is they used to just air stuff on television and then throw it in the garbage.
Sure.
And then he would go into the garbage and get that out.
And then archive that stuff.
right. I think to be in the relationship that he's in, you have to find somebody who's also has that relationship with art, you know, Travis. So
sure.
You could justify it too, because like if people roll their eyes at you know, your garage full of I Love Lucy episodes, it's probably not going to work. Because you got to... maybe.
I don't know. I'm sitting in a room full of comic books that I've been collecting since I was 8 years old, and my wife could give two shits about any of that.
Right. As long as she has room for her stuff, right?
Exactly.
And Travis, I just got a text message a few minutes ago, and I'm pretty excited about it. You're probably not too up on Missouri politics.
No, I'm not.
So...
Not for this election cycle, anyway.
A couple years ago, Travis, we had a governor, the governor of Missouri, and he was fucking the guy from Story of the Year's wife.
Oh, hey.
I think he was blackmailing her with pictures. I guess this is all allegedly because I don't really know for sure.
Sure, of course.
So he's fucking the guy from Story of the Year's wife. I think he was like tying her up in his basement. He was doing some weird shit, Travis. There was bondage involved.
It was consensual, though. He wasn't, like, done having sex with her, and he's like, now it's time to tie you up against your will in the basement.
Well, and then he was taking dirty pictures of her and blackmailing her with the pictures. Anyway, all this comes out. It's a whole fucking ordeal. And, I mean, he's the governor. And so he resigned and got divorced.
Of course.
Because they were like, yeah, you're a creep.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a couple years ago, Travis. And I just got a text message that he's running for Senate now. You can't do that, can you? Resign in disgrace. Is being a senator, that's a bump in prestige, isn't it? Because it's a national thing instead of a state thing.
I think so. I think when you're the governor of the state, though, I think you have a higher controlling power in that state. But I feel like, as a representative of the state at the federal government, I would think that would be a raise. But Yeah, politics is funky now. It, you know, you can be a disgraced adulterer who blackmails a band member's wife and then resign and then be like, hey, don't worry about it. Elect me.
I guess he's hoping we forgot. It was just like 2018, Travis. It wasn't that long ago.
That's the easiest mudslinging that has ever been presented to whoever he's running against.
Yeah, you were fucking the Day I Die guy's wife.
Dude, while you were in office, you were S&M-ing with another man's wife and had to resign.
What are you going to do if we take you to the Senate? You're single now. You can get even weirder.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to worry about getting caught. Uh-huh. I guess he wasn't worried about getting caught. I mean, he did get caught. But like
wasn't worried about
Wiener guy, he was a creep and he got caught being a creep and then like started running for stuff again. He was winning. He was doing well. And then he got caught being a creep again.
Some people can't help but just be a creep.
Wouldn't you be so embarrassed? I mean, like, you know, you're going to have to talk to people and that they're probably going to bring up the whole S&M picture blackmail thing.
Some people, I think their ego is so large. And the taste of power is like so rich that they just don't think about it.
Yeah, when I was the governor, that was really great. I could like tell people what to do and stuff. I want more.
Yeah, I feel like it's just like celebrities, you know, like we've talked about before, where politicians are very similar to like large celebrities, like your big names, your Brad Pitts, your Sean Penns, where they just cease to be real people, right? Like they just don't operate within the same lanes of humanity as the rest of society does. They just do shit. And even if there's consequences, they just kind of move on and keep doing the shit.
I'm thinking as myself, and I'm thinking I would be so embarrassed that I wouldn't want to ever talk to the public again.
You'd have to move, right? Yeah. Like if something like
I
that
for sure wouldn't
community.
Be running in Missouri again because they know. I mean, like, I'd move to Wisconsin. Like, you might not know. Yeah. And you might not give it a goog.
Right. I wouldn't even know the guy's name. So he could come here and start running for Senate. And it'd be fine.
It might, like, show up at the bottom, but it also said, oh, he's the governor of Missouri for a while. Be like, oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. Good. Well, at least he was electable.
Yeah, he has some experience. And you don't get into the personal life section where it said that he S&M'd broads.
And then blackmailed their husbands.
Travis, on a similar note, I gotta know about this flaming hot Mountain Dew.
Oh, that is a very similar note, actually.
So
everything's flaming hot now, right? And much to my surprise, they released a flaming hot Mountain Dew.
Now, is it citrusy, or does it just taste like burn?
That was my thought. Like, what could it possibly be? When you think of flaming hot Mountain Dew, what is the first thing that comes in your mind? Like, how do you wrap your head around that, Mike?
See, I think of like when you drink a whole bunch of gulps of Sprite and like you feel that burn in your throat. Okay. That's what I think it has to be. I mean, like, it doesn't taste like a Cheeto, right?
Well, and see, and that's kind of where I was at too. It's like, how could you possibly do this? And the only thing that I could wrap my head around is that it was like cinnamony, like it would be like taking a shot of Fireball, right? Like that's just kind of what I assumed it
okay,
was.
Okay, yes,
like
cinnamony, that makes sense.
It's not. It's not that at all. So what this flavor of this Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew is, it's have you had Mountain Dew Live Wire, the orange one?
Yeah, that one's kind of mild, isn't it? It's a mild flavor.
Yeah, it's like just like an orangey kind of. So this is what it's like. It's like a Mountain Dew Live Wire with like a splash of lime.
Okay.
Is what it tastes like. And then the flaming hot part comes from like, you know, when if you sleep with your mouth wide open overnight and you wake up in the morning and the back of your throat kind of burns a little bit, kind of dry and sore.
Like you had a Halls in your mouth.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's where the flaming hot part comes in. It kind of, after you take a drink, you're like, oh, okay, this is like a orange slime soda, and then your throat starts to hurt.
So it's not so much a flavor as like a state of mind.
Years ago, and this is years ago, they would never even attempt to try something like this again. But there was an independent energy drink company who created an energy drink called cocaine. It was literally in a red can, and in white letters across the can, it said cocaine.
Dun, 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 dun. Cocaine, right?
Cocaine, right. So this energy drink, what it was, for people who are familiar with cocaine, and, you know, this is not from personal experience, of course, just from what I've been told in the past, is that when you do cocaine, you get something in the back of your throat that's called the drip. So it's kind of like an aspirin-y burn in the back of your throat, which some people say that they really enjoy. It's like one of the, besides the fact that the cocaine is speeding up everything around or inside you, it's, you get this drip thing. So they made this energy drink called cocaine, which it did taste just kind of cinnamony, but when you drank it, you would get the same sensation in the back of your throat as when you do cocaine. So it was like
actual cocaine.
Like actual cocaine. Okay. Exactly. So you drink the cocaine energy drink, and it was quite full of caffeine. So it did give you like that nice energy drink like buzz, but also you got the cocaine drip in the back of your throat. And by the way, this energy drink lasted exactly 2 weeks on shelves before it was pulled and the company was like dissolved because you can't make an energy drink called cocaine.
Can't call it. How did it even get to stores to begin with?
I think it was an independent company, and there was like independent beer distributors who were like, oh, cool. I bet just for the novelty factor, we'll be able to sell that. Well, the problem is you can sell it, and energy drinks don't have an age prohibition. So any child can walk into Joe Schmo's convenience store and buy as many cans of cocaine as they want. So once that was noticed, the public at large was like, you can't do this.
Yeah, you can't do that. That's what you say. So, that's what the whole press release says. You can't do that.
Yeah. Effective immediately, cocaine will be pulled from the shelves. When asked for comment, legislators said, you can't do that.
Yeah, no, no. Stop
right.
It.
So anyway, this, going back to the Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew, that is kind of the novelty of it, right? It's not bad tasting. It kind of gives you like a burn just in the back of your throat. And then it kind of gives you gut rot after drinking about a half a can. So out of Travis's soda reviews, out of 10, I give it I don't know. Try it once and forget about it.
Right. I saw a guy on Twitter, Travis. He was buying a 12-pack of it. And I said, no.
That's too much.
You buy one to try it. You don't buy 12 because then you're just going to have 11 in your fridge forever.
Yeah. You don't start with a 12-pack. The only thing that I could see, you know, 12-packs would probably be good for middle schoolers who are having like a sleepover where they're just going to play a bunch of video games all night, a bunch of Fortnite. They're going to stop. They're going to say, Mom, you got to buy me...
me and my 11 friends, so we can all have one.
Buy the Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew because half my class is coming over.
Yeah.
And we're all going to have some.
Yeah.
And then if there's any left over after that, then you can just throw it in the trash because nobody's ever going to drink this.
Is there going to be like some mix-ins, Travis? Could you mix this Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew with some alcohol to make a concoction of some sort?
I would imagine you could. I think a really good mixologist could use that throat burn to their advantage. I don't know exactly how. I would assume you'd have to do something, you know, with the taste buds exploding and then your throat hurting. I don't know. Yeah, you could. I mean, to get rid of it, mix anything with rum or vodka and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was curious because I've been seeing these popping around and I've going, that's not good. And Mountain Dew, for the most part, I don't enjoy. Actually, you know what? I would say Diet Mountain Dew is better than Mountain Dew Mountain Dew.
I like Diet Mountain Dew, and actually I'm a big fan of Mountain Dew Zero, which is a different taste than Diet Dew, but is still a zero-calorie beverage.
Yeah, I got a four-pack of those Nitro Pepsis, Travis, and those were pretty gross.
So a lot of people say that
they just taste like flat soda. They're not good. Like they were saying you pour it in a glass and you can admire the little bubbles. And I did that, mm-hmm. Travis. I didn't see no bubbles. I saw no bubbles.
Yeah. Did you turn the can directly upside down?
Oh, give me a fucking break. What are you talking about turning
the can? It says it right down on the can. Because the little nitrous ball that's in there, you got to crack the can, turn it directly upside down, and that's when you get the it almost looks like you're pouring a Guinness.
Oh, see, now I got to go buy more.
Did you throw the rest of them away?
Well, no. I mean, I drank all four of them. They're not good, but they were in my fridge, so I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't want to store them. I just wanted them to go away, and the best way for them to go away is to just drink them.
True.
Speaking of which, Travis, so I took a shit last night, right?
Mm-hmm. As one does.
Well, and see, sometimes I felt like I had to shit, but I went to take a shit, and I couldn't really shit. It was just like a series of farts, like a whole bunch of farts. And so then I'm just sitting on the toilet, checking my phone. Because that's a good place to just check your phone and relax for a while. And, the dogs don't usually come in there. I can just kind of be by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so when
it's important for a man to get that alone time.
When I stood up and I looked to see what I had made, there was this little bitty, transparent square with words written on it. And it was backwards. And it said Sunday brunch. And Travis, I don't think that I shit a sticker that said Sunday brunch, but I also don't know where a sticker that says Sunday brunch would have come from. But it was in my toilet. It was backwards. It said Sunday brunch. I took a picture of it. I can send it to you.
What would ever be the purpose of a sticker that says Sunday brunch?
Well, I don't even know if it was a sticker necessarily, but it was transparent and the words were backwards. So when I shit it into the toilet, it went the wrong way. Because I guess your butthole doesn't really know which way words go.
Are you making it a habit of it to eat stickers?
No. Well, do you think I ate the sticker and didn't digest the sticker, and so then I just shit the sticker?
Have you had Sunday brunch recently?
No, but what would a Sunday brunch sticker even be on? See, this is a mystery,
Sunday
Travis.
Brunch buffet, maybe?
I know this is weird, but it happened and I've been thinking about it. I shit a sticker that says Sunday brunch, but it wasn't in shit. It was by itself.
Because there was no shit.
Because there was no shit.
So if there's no shit, where could a Sunday brunch sticker come from?
I don't know. And I mean, if I had a Sunday brunch sticker, the Sunday brunch sticker probably would have been in the kitchen with food items, because Sunday brunch implies a meal of some sorts.
Did you perhaps sit on this sticker with your bare ass and then it just fell off your bare ass into the toilet?
See, now that's a possibility and probably a much more likely scenario than me eating the sticker and then farting the sticker.
Right, but farting the sticker out. Because you would think that you would digest that a little bit. The sticker wouldn't be whole by the time it came out.
Yeah, but... So
this is a mystery.
Maybe it was on my pants. And when I went to take my pants down, it was a tiny little sticker. It was very small, which means it probably wasn't meant to advertise that something is good for Sunday brunch because it was too small. I mean, the sticker was the size of the power button on an iPhone. It was very small. I had to get
that is very, very small.
Yeah, it was very, very small.
Because see, I'm picturing maybe you were sitting in a prep kitchen or something, and they were going to have to label a specific food item, put it in the fridge. That's they wanted this is for Sunday brunch. Don't take it out until Sunday brunch. But
if you imagine the sticker on an apple or an orange. It was smaller than that. It was probably half the size of that.
That sticker shouldn't even exist.
Right. It was too small to even really exist. Travis, do you think that somebody put the sticker there to mess with me? Do you think it was a trick?
Yes.
Because they knew I would notice it because I turn around to look and see what I made.
In the chat, Jody says Laura was pulling your leg. But where would she even get a Sunday brunch sticker to do such a thing?
Especially one so small.
Yeah. So what do we cover, Travis? We covered the former governor of Missouri bondaging gals. Mountain Dew.
And blame it on Mountain Dew.
Farting stickers.
Sunday brunch.
I mean, I'd say pretty successful first half of the show.
Hey, we're off to a good start. What more can you expect on a Sunday afternoon?
I mean, these afternoon shows, they're riveting content. It's like really good stuff.
They're of the highest quality.
I thought it was a wrap.
Hello there. Hello, Lucille.
Don't forget that we have a Lucille Ball.
Stu was not just a fan of Lucille Ball. Everybody's a fan of Lucille Ball, but he was like a buddy of Lucille Ball.
Here, get a shot of that.
Am I recording? No, Stuart, that's what I want to know.
What? Yeah, it's rolling.
So these are 35mm work prints from Here's Lucy. Tons and tons of scripts. Gary ended up telling me to throw most of this out. So you know where this is now? In my garage.
Did you know, Lucy, I've watched you since I was a kid. I know, dear. I know. I've heard it a million times. I've always dreamed of being in a Lucy show with you.
Stuart. All right.
I hear about what a taskmaster she was. Push people around. You have to keep in mind, she was a woman in power well before women were in power.
It wasn't pushy or bossy. Right.
Be careful with my camera.
Sure.
She knew her stuff.
You're panning too fast.
WFOD!
It was a day like any other.
You know, honey, maybe this trip to Australia will be good for us. Get away from it all. Just you, me, and the dogs.
The government has started the clock. Mr. Depp has 48 hours to comply or his dogs will be euthanized.
Boo! Pistol! Get in the car, Muffins! They're coming!
One man must face an entire regime who only want one thing. To kill his dogs. Dan Furnicase is the Prime Minister.
Bring me the heads of those fucking dogs.
Dan Furnicase is Johnny Depp.
Boo, pistol, swing to safety in my voluminous scarves.
Dan Furnicase is the dogs. In Doggone.
Finding this rap generator was as easy as typing in automatic song generator or some shit, so I would think we'd be able to find something.
We're all going to the summer pool party. No more swimming for a week or two. Loud beers and funny girls at our summer pool party. No more easy songs for me or you for a week or two. Summertime and the living is loud. Beers are drinking and the girls are high. Oh, your cousin's wet and your nana is hot. So hush, my sticky bae, don't you cry. Oh, the summer of 1999. I can't wait to do some drinking with you. You can't wait to do some drinking with me. This just can't be summer love, you'll see. This just can't be summer love. 'Cause you were mine for the summer. Now we know it's nearly over. Feels like July sunshine, but I always remember. You were my summer love. You always will be my summer love. I wish they all could be. I wish they all could be. I wish they all could be beers of Midwest. Summertime and the living is loud. Beers are drinking and the girls are high. Oh, your cousin's wet and your nana is hot. So hush, sticky bay, don't you cry.
What a beautiful boy. Once again, WFOD. wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Welcome back. Our guest today is a TV historian and subject of a new documentary called Stu's Show, which will be available on all major digital platforms May 2nd. Stu's Show Stack is on the program.
Hello there. Is this Mike?
This is Mike.
Nice to meet you, Mike.
Travis is here, too. Hi, say hi, Travis.
Hey, Stu.
Hello, Travis. Your name wasn't on my sheet here, so sorry about that. Hello, Travis.
That's all right. I try to keep my name off of any official documents.
Oh, is it going to be one of those type of shows? Okay, great. So,
Stu, I watched the movie yesterday. The movie's great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was very careful who I allowed to let tell our story because it's kind of a sensitive thing, and the medical industry is not going to be that happy about it.
Right.
But CJ did a wonderful job capturing, I don't know how he did it, 96 minutes, how he was able to get the bulk of my career in there, as well as my fight against the insurance company and the medical industry to get Janine well.
Yeah, so, it was kind of a sneak attack because I didn't know any of that was in there. It was presented to me as...
That's the whole point of the film. that was... The whole point of the film was to hook the audience as me, this, you know, kind of likable schmuck who loves old TV and got lucky enough to work for Lucille Ball and has this internet talk show, and then all of a sudden it does a 180, and then I become an asshole trying to get my wife well.
Is Jeannie doing okay?
Yeah, you know, everybody asks that. She's fine. She's not 100% recovered. She's better than she was at the end of that movie. But she still has some balance issues and some behavioral issues. But she's got all her marbles, and she's still cleaning the house night and day. And, you know, she's doing okay. You know, if the doctors hadn't told me she was going to fully recover, I probably wouldn't have fought as hard to get her well. But, she's doing fine. Surprisingly, nobody has asked for any interviews with her, and that's the one question that I always get. Is she okay? Is she all right? So I'm having CJ and the producer of the film on my own show on May 18th, and Janine will be on with us there because I told her, I said, you've got to do the show because everybody's wondering if you're still around after all this time. The film was supposed to come out 2 years ago, but the pandemic screwed everything up.
Right. Travis, he's mentioned CJ a couple times. Did you see The Perfect Bid, the documentary about the guy who kind of scammed The Price is Right?
Oh, I love that.
He did that too.
That is why I agreed to let CJ. There are two reasons that I agreed to make our story public. One was I had CJ on my show to promote Perfect Bid. I had no idea who he was. He's this 30-something young, you know, long-haired hippie who came in to promote that. I saw the film, you know, when I heard about the film, and I said, well, this is the story of the guy who guessed the exact price of the showcase. And I said, well, that's 10 minutes. What about the rest of the film? And they said, well, come and see it. Yeah, well, seriously. And and they said, come and see it. You'll be surprised. And just like you guys were surprised with the 180 that our film does, I was blown away by this Ted Slauson guy. I didn't know that he'd sit there and memorize all these prices and have these computer programs, and he went to the show 40 million times, and then he finally got picked as a contestant. And I said, this is fucking fascinating. This is incredible. I said, you've got to come and do my show. So I had him come on with Roger Dobkowitz, who was the previous producer of The Price is Right when Bob Barker was hosting it. And we chatted about the film, and we showed clips, and I was blown away by it. And when he came over to here to do my show, he was blown away by what I had in our whole story with Janine. And he said, this is my next documentary. And I said, well, now, hold on. I want to make sure that it's done right. And you did a great job on Perfect Bit. But he convinced me. And so that's how it happened. And he was great. He's a brilliant, brilliant filmmaker.
That is pretty amazing to come in and kind of get your basic story and be like, this is something that I can make a documentary of that will be super intriguing and keep people watching. Like, and then to convince you who were not actively looking to make a documentary to actually do that.
Well, here's the deal. I told you there were two reasons I agreed to. One was when I saw Perfect Bid and thought, this guy is going places and I want to help promote his career and get him going. And the other reason is I told him, I said, look, I don't want to show off the fact that I knew Lucille Ball, because that's just, you know, patting myself on the back. And I don't really care about promoting my show. I mean, I do want to promote my show, but I don't want to make the film to say, hey, everybody, look at me. I said, I will do this film if we can show the regular general public out there that when a medical crisis, when an emergency comes up, you can learn how to play the system and you can emerge victoriously with the medical industry. You can cut through all the BS and all the bureaucracy and all the red tape if you learn how to play the game, and you can get your loved one well. That's the reason I agreed to do the film. And he said, great. He said, because here's my idea. And he told me the idea. And I said, well, do you really think after 30 minutes of all of this show business stuff with Lucille Ball and all these classic TV people that are coming to do my show, you're going to do this 180 and all of a sudden it becomes fighting for Janine's life? I said, you really think people are going to stick around? And he said, yeah, the way I'm going to do it, they will, because I have to establish you first.
Sure.
And once the audience is on your side, they'll be rooting for you the whole way. And I said, well, good luck with that. But he did it. He did it, guys. He did it.
Stu, I guess we should, for people who don't really know what it is that you've done, I guess.
I don't even know what I've done.
So you kind of, are you responsible for a bunch of stuff still existing just by, now, Travis, I wouldn't go so far as to call Stu a hoarder, but I would say that
you better not, or this conversation is over.
Stu, what I would say is you are probably a name drop that any hoarder could use to win an argument about their hoarding, though, right? I mean, like,
well, go ahead, finish your thought.
am I far
off? I'm
not
a hoarder, okay? And this is funny. You're backing me into a corner, guys. This is what any hoarder would say when you call them out on that. They'll say, I'm
right.
not a hoarder, I'm a collector.
Yeah.
All right, get your laughs. Go ahead.
No,
right.
no.
Okay. No.
I'm the same, Stu. I'm surrounded by comic books as we speak. I can't stop
okay,
myself.
All right.
They're
so
everywhere.
Now I know where you guys are coming from. Okay. So, yeah, I collected comics as a kid. I still have some of them. Everything here, if you come over here, everything is organized. There's nothing on the floor. There's nothing on the table. Our house looks like a house. My office looks like a house. My TV studio part of my office looks like a TV studio. Everything is on shelves. Everything is organized. It looks more like the Library of Congress, okay?
Right.
And I'll take pictures and send them to you if you don't believe me.
No, I saw the movies, Stu. I saw your collection. I saw it.
And a collector.
Yeah. What you have is a bunch of stuff that probably otherwise wouldn't have existed, right? Like, because what TV people used to do is broadcast it and then just throw it away.
I have the qualifies for that, yes.
How did you get into that, right? Like, and I guess that's a question you can ask any collector or anything. Like, what drew you to wanting to preserve those items?
Okay, well, you want the long answer or the short answer?
Mix it up.
Well, you've come to the right person, because I'm totally mixed up. Okay, so when I was a kid, 8, 9 years old, I just was fascinated by television. I loved television. I loved watching it. I was fascinated by the way it was put on. My second grade teacher was married to a gentleman who worked at the local PBS station in Los Angeles. And I'll tell you how old I am. It wasn't PBS then. It was NET. National Educational Television. Look that up, because you guys sound a lot younger than me. So anyway, he talked about how they put on the show and how the cameras worked and how the lights worked and how you got mic and all of that. And I was just blown away by that. So when I turned 8 or 9, My grandfather, for my birthday that year, bought me a Bell & Howell Silent 8mm projector. Okay, this is way, way, way before the days of VCRs and DVD and streaming. This is like 1964, okay? And there were a couple of companies that sold 8mm home movies of their professional films. One was Castle Films, and they sold Woody Woodpecker cartoons and Abbott and Costello cut-downs from the features and all of the stuff that you could see on TV. But in those days, and I know this is hard to believe, in those days you had to watch it in real time or you missed it.
Right.
So stuff like the Flintstones and the Lucy Show and Huckleberry Hound and everything that we take for granted now watching on Boomerang or HBO Max where you can just, you know, grab your remote and watch it. You had to plant your butt in front of the TV and you had to be there for it or you missed it. So Flintstones was airing in prime time on Friday nights in those days. And if I wasn't in front of our black and white TV at 8:30 on Friday nights, I missed the show and I was not a happy camper. So when these projectors came out, Columbia was another company that put out black and white shorter versions of their television cartoons. And I, for $5 or $6, you could own 10 minutes of a Flintstones or a Three Stooges or a Mr. Magoo. And my parents used to buy me those for birthdays and holidays and stuff. And that was the only thing we had outside of watching the show live, except for an occasional LP record with the original voices of the cartoon people on the record, or if we were really daring enough, a reel-to-reel tape recorder that we could take the microphone and put up next to the speaker of the television and make our own recordings. I did that too.
So that was just the audio version of the cartoon?
Just audio. Yeah, okay. If you told me I could have a videotape recorder in my home when I was 10 years old, I would have married you. They existed, but they were on 2-inch tape and they were in big, big, big engineering rooms in the television studios.
Right. I think my parents have a VCR in their basement, like one of the first VCRs around that was like $800 that like they can't part with. I don't think it even works anymore, but they have it down in the basement and they won't get rid of it just because they spent $800 on it. And they said,
the new half-inch machines when they came out in the late 70s, and of course by that point I was in my early 20s and I scrimped and saved like crazy. My first Zenith Betamax SL8200, which I still have, and it doesn't work either. So I think there's something in the air about us all of our old parts saving this stuff. It was about $1,400, I think, yeah. And an L500 2-hour tape was $20. So. But I was in heaven. I was taping MASH every Monday night. I was taping All in the Family. I was watching this stuff. You know, I mean, it sounds crazy now, but I was able to watch All in the Family at 2 p.m. if I wanted to watch it, you know?
Yeah, and that's amazing, Stu. I did the same thing, like, you know, because I was born in 1980 and people think, oh, you've always had this technology. It's like, no, the same deal. If I wanted to watch Masters of the Universe, I had to be there in front of the TV and it was the same deal. Like, if I didn't catch it, I didn't know what Keyman did that week. And the closest we got was like a Viewmaster, right? Where you put those little slides in the machine, put them up to your eyes and you could click the button and you could see different stills of He-Man punching Skeletor. And so when I grew up and, you know, when same deal, people forget that there was a time when you rented VCRs because it was just not affordable for you to purchase one. So you could like rent a VCR, rent a couple of videotapes and you'd watch the same movies 100 times over the course of a weekend because that's what you had besides TV. So when we actually
isn't it amazing what used to entertain us in those days?
Right.
And now, you know, you pull on your streaming service and you can click and watch literally anything that exists and you don't know what to watch because there's just so
exactly.
much.
Exactly. You've got 500 channels on television and nothing is on.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So anyway, just to finish up, I started with 8mm film, and when I became a teenager and went to work in the business hawking TV tickets, I saved up enough money to get a 16mm projector, and that opened me up to the collector's world and the collector magazines that were out there, and I found that people were doing what I ended up doing later on, which is called dumpster diving, is when prints got worn out at the TV stations, most of the syndicators didn't want them back, so they just said, toss them and we'll send you new prints, and so I jumped into the dumpsters and took out the prints. They still ran.
Right.
Yeah, they were cut up. Yeah, they were splicey. But my God, I had personal prints of all the stuff I watched on TV. And so that's what led, that's how the collector market started. And I built up an enormous library of classic TV. And I've also discovered that a lot of stations in the early 60s and 70s were double affiliates. In other words, if you were in, say, Butte, Montana, you didn't have an ABC, a CBS, and an NBC station. You maybe had two stations, and they split the programming between all three. And so they could only take one show. Like, let's say Bewitched was on Thursday nights at 8:30 on ABC, which it was. Well, if the station that was the ABC affiliate was running an NBC show at the time, they were sent a 16-millimeter print of Bewitched to run when they wanted to run it. And usually that was in the afternoon on Saturday and Sunday when they needed programming time to fill. And so once those 16-millimeter prints were done, the networks did the same thing. They threw them in the dumpster. Well, collectors like me took them out and sold them in the collecting and the trading marketplace. And that's how I got these original Bewitched with the Quaker Oats and Chevrolet commercials from the 60s. And, you know, it was quite a racket back then. And that's when I built up the collection. So that's how it started. And I, like I said, I've always been fascinated with TV. And then the production companies heard about me and my collection, and they started calling me to supervise and to consult on some of their retrospective shows, because I knew everything about this stuff. And that eventually led to me becoming Lucy's film archivist, because she was impressed with my knowledge of her career. And that also, you know, led to the show that I do now, Preserving Classic TV. So there you go. That's a very long answer to your short question.
Amazing. So when you met, did you meet your wife in the business then?
No. In fact, there's a misnomer going around saying that I met my wife at one of the Lucy conventions we produced. She was there. But I was married to somebody else at the time, and I didn't even know Janine existed. You know, we had a couple of thousand people a year come through there. It was, you know, they were like Star Trek conventions back in the 90s for Lucy fans. I met her because she discovered my show, but she discovered the show through the Lucy fan club, because I had a lot of Lucy actors and actresses on the show in the early days when they were still around, like Doris Singleton and Shirley Mitchell and Keith Thibodeau, who played Little Ricky. They all did the audio version of my show back in the day when you couldn't stream video, and she became a listener to the show, and that's how we met. She used to call in and ask them questions, and I just fell in love with her voice, and we talked one night on the phone for 4 hours, and neither of us was looking for a relationship, and she came down to LA on her own dime. And we just hit it off. And for 7 years, I had the best relationship I ever had in my whole life. And it's like, you know, thank you. I finally met somebody who loves what I do and can put up with me and all this. And then she had the brain aneurysm. It's like, oh, great. Now I'm going to lose her. And I said, no, I'm not. You know, damn it. This one's not going to get away. And that forms the basis for the film.
It's called Stu's Show.
Same as my talk show. Same title.
This just stewshow.com to hear your show, right?
Correct. Well, to watch the show. Yeah, they can watch. I have an audio simulcast, but we're total high-def television now. It's Stu's Show, two S's in the middle there, stewshow.com.
Do you have it on podcast, or is it just like the live stream?
You know, it technically is. It's a video podcast, but it looks more like a regular, you know, over-the-air talk show. Mm-hmm. I archive my shows on my website, and I have a Roku channel. They can go to the Roku store and search Stu's Show there, and they can install the channel, which is free. And there's about 30 previous television shows that they can watch on demand. They can also see the new shows every other Wednesday there. And I also just recently added a 24/7 channel that's free, which is 2 years behind. In other words, if you go on there now, you'll see the shows that aired this month 2 years ago in a continuous 8-hour loop. And so I make it as easy as possible for people to see the show. But as far as putting them on iTunes and some of the other places for podcasts, no, that I don't do. I keep the show pretty exclusive so that I have control over it.
Makes sense. Guys, Stu's Show, it's going to be on all the digital rental services on May 2nd. Check it out.
Correct.
It's a good documentary, good time. Stu, man, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We appreciate your time.
You guys are great. I didn't know what to expect here, you know, because I went to your Facebook page and I went, okay, well, this is going to be interesting. But this is great. I really enjoyed this.
Great. Stu, thanks, man.
Thanks so much, Stu.
Thank you, Travis. Thank you, Mike. It's great talking to you, too.
Take care.
Take care, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Travis, Stu's a good guy, right?
You
Fun
bet.
Time. Guy can bullshit with the best of them, can't he?
Hell yeah. That's what happens when a guy's been producing his own show for as many years as he has.
Right.
And you can come in and talk to a couple of doofuses on a Sunday afternoon and have a decent conversation.
See, I think what happens is like he got the keys to the castle of all of Lucille Ball stuff, and I think he has all of Dick Van Dyke stuff. And having that fucking content is the whole name of the game now. I mean, you look at these huge ass deals that people are making, like for old episodes of Seinfeld and shit. TV Land needs something.
And they certainly do.
Call up Stu and they say, hey, man, you got all those old Bewitched? We need those.
Yeah, we need to plug. We need to fill an hour gap or a 2 hour gap. And we got nothing. So.
Right.
What do you got?
Interesting guy.
Yeah, certainly. I can only imagine some of the things he's been a part of in his life. And I guess I don't have to, because I'll be able to watch Stu's show on all streaming platforms on May 2nd.
May 2nd. That's like in a week, Travis.
Perfect.
We already saw it, though, because we're big shots, right?
Yeah.
Travis, let me ask you a question.
Please.
Do you have what you would say is like a pick of the week, something you want the people to know about, Travis?
I do. Now, listen, these guys have been around forever. They're old news and then they're new news. Some people might think it's juvenile. I happen to think that it's some of the funniest content ever produced. Jackass Forever. watched that this last week. And once the bits got going, I did not stop laughing for 2 hours. There was a lot more penis work in this than I expected. But regardless of that fact, that movie was so funny. By the time it was over, my throat hurt from laughing so much. My wife looked at me like I was some kind of insane person because I couldn't stop laughing. Jackass Forever was amazing. I cannot believe these fools were still doing that as of last year. They're like old men now.
Right.
And, launching themselves out of cannons and shit. It's crazy.
I would say that it's probably the worst of the Jackass movies, but that's still pretty great.
It's yeah, right. I would say the last, I think Jackass 3 was probably the best, in my opinion.
The 3D one where they had like the like $2 million camera.
Yeah. Yeah. And the
ridiculous
end
nonsense.
Never ceases to like make me gag and laugh at the same time when they launch Steve-O on that bungee contraption in a full porta potty, and he's just like bouncing all over and is getting shit in his mouth and nose and eyes and ears, and he can't keep his mouth shut because he's like freaking out about being like bounced around the walls super fast. And that's an equal gag / hilarious laugh, and a lot of that happened in this movie. I don't think there was a weak segment in Jackass Forever. I loved it all.
Travis, I saw Uncharted.
You did?
Yeah. Travis, Uncharted, it was really dumb. It was a really dumb movie. I had several problems with it, Travis. One of the problems is, like, pretty much they had to get keys and maps and shit. You know, the movie played a lot like a video game. They had to get keys and maps so that they could find where they were going to go do their adventure and, you know, use the keys to open the things.
Yeah.
And for some reason, like, they got these keys and maps, but like the bad guys were always there. Like the bad
Already?
Guys figured out where to go without the keys and maps. Mm. And they were there. And I don't know how they kept being there.
Wasn't that kind of how the last, that term, Tomb Raider reboot kind of went, where they needed to,
I don't think I saw all that.
These things to get there, and then the bad guys were already there. Wasn't that the same kind of deal?
I don't think I saw that Tomb Raider movie, Travis. I didn't no. see it. And worth mentioning, so
at one point, there is like the most heavy-handed, awful cameo I've ever seen. The voice actor for the Uncharted video games makes a cameo, and you will know exactly when it is because it is so fucking like gross. The rest of the movie.
Does he wear like his is there like a crew jacket from where when they were making the video game and it just says Uncharted across it and then his name?
So at one point they dive out of an airplane and none of them have parachutes, and like they have to find parachutes while they're falling from the sky. Like I think there's a parachute on a antique car or something. And that has a parachute. So they like get in the car and use the cars. It's ridiculous. But I mean, it's neat looking. It looks incredible.
Sure.
But it's ridiculous. So anyway, they land the car. Or no, they don't land in the car. I think they got on like a ship. Anyway, Travis, they land and they're fine, right? After falling out of an airplane. And they're in the ocean. And then suddenly, like they get to land, like they see land and are able to get to it. And when they get to land, it's like a vacation resort or something. And there's just a guy sitting on like a lounger. And he goes, "Hey, you guys look like you've gone through some stuff." The guy goes, "Oh, yeah, well, we fell out of a car that was falling out of an airplane and we were stranded at sea, but we're okay now." And the guy, he stands up and he goes, "I did that once." No, seriously, it's the worst thing you've ever seen, Trevor.
I thought he was going to stand up and be like, "Well, it sounds like you guys have been in uncharted territory."
No, it's a bad movie, Trevor. It's not good. Marky Mark, I think he was supposed to be like an old grizzled guy. I didn't play the Uncharted game, so I'm not sure. But like Marky Mark was the wrong choice for the character. I don't even know what the character is in the video games, but I know it shouldn't have been Marky Mark.
but regardless of what it was supposed to be, it wasn't supposed to be Marky Mark.
Right. It was a bad movie, Travis. I'd say my pick of the week is probably Moon Knight. Enjoying Moon Knight Disney Plus. It's a good time. I wasn't really familiar with Moon Knight, so I don't know what's going on or why they're doing the things they're doing, but it's a fun show. I'm enjoying watching it.
Moon Knight has been around for a long time, and he's gone through a lot of different iterations, I guess you could say. Like, he was one guy, then he was a different guy, and he was possessed by the spirit of Khonshu, but then he wasn't. He was just an insane guy. So you're pretty much in the same boat as everybody, even if they are familiar with Moon Knight, because Moon Knight is such a random character who doesn't really make sense, but is really cool.
Travis, I mean, we did it, right? Good times.
Yeah. Another Sunday afternoon special, baby.
Check out Stu's show, the website with the talking to. So his wife has a brain aneurysm, right? And so like people are going and visiting her in the hospital. She's in a coma. And like all these famous TV actors like keep coming and visiting. And it's probably really weird for everybody because they're like, "Hey, aren't you the fucking guy from Silver Spoons?" And, you know, like, "Hey, you're Butch Patrick. What are you doing here?" You know, it is like an endless stream of just like TV stars. Ed Asner's just showing up and being like, "Hey, I'm here to, you know, hang out with the coma gal."
Some of the nursing staff would just like kind of post up by the door and have their autograph pad sitting there and sure. Like, "Hey, before you go in, we require you to sign this sheet."
All right, we did it. Oh, there we go. What I would say is that until Dannon.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to this installment of WFOD. Please subscribe and leave positive reviews on your preferred podcast player. Share the episode on social media or with one of your in-real-life friends. For links to our ever-expanding universe, including our Discord, our Twitch, and YouTube channels, and our library of back episodes, visit us at WFODshow.com. Thanks to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio for the music used in this podcast. Thanks to our Patreon sponsors, Amanda, Valerie, Brian, and Liquid. Visit patreon.com/WFODix to help support the show. Leave us a voicemail at 636-487-4263. Email us, Mike or Travis, at WFODix.com, or reach out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. We'll see you next week. Thank you. Goodbye. Guts got on here and called us scumbags. I didn't see that chat message until just now. And Rob said something about how him and Jim did a show a really long time ago where they went through all the Adam Sandler movies to decide whether they liked him or not. That's actually pretty good. Mm. Like, what's your success rate with Adam Sandler movies?
Oh, sure.
I probably like more than I don't like. You know what? I haven't seen quite a few of the newer ones.
Yeah, I think Hubie Halloween might be the only one I've seen since That's My Boy. And I never saw the one where he plays himself and his sister.
I didn't see that one. I didn't see That's My Boy.
Oh, that's great. That one's great.
Oh.
That's My Boy is like probably one of the better Adam Sandler movies.
He did one with Al Pacino. Dustin Hoffman. I didn't see that one. He was like a
Oh, yeah, that was a serious one. That one was good.
Yeah.
Sandy Wexler.
The one with that Brooklyn Decker gal, that one was okay.
Which one was that?
Jennifer Aniston had to pretend like she was his ex-wife.
Oh, yeah, that one was fine.
It was fine.
Oh, yeah, he did that murder mystery one. I didn't see that either.
It wasn't good, but it was fine for like a Netflix movie.
Sure. Just throw on. That's kind of like that David Spade one where he plays somebody's dad. Right. It's whatever. It was an hour and a half.
Right.
That was my opinion of it.
You watch these movies, Travis, and they're all just fine.
Yeah. My review, my official review of the Father of the Year on Netflix starring David, what I just said his name. It was an hour and a half. That's my official review.
It was something that was a certain amount of time, and when it was over, it was done.
Yeah. When it was over, I turned back on the Bar Rescue Pluto channel.
Yeah. It existed, and now it could exist again if you wanted it to, but why? It
still exists.
Yeah.
For somebody will watch it again for the first time at some point.
Right. And when they do, they'll say,
"It was an hour and a half."
That's kind of how Uncharted was, Travis. Like, when Uncharted was over, I was like, I mean, it was really bad. Okay, so there's this one scene in Uncharted, right? they had to go through a lot to get these keys. These keys are really important.
Of course.
Like these solid gold keys that they get. And they have to figure out where, like, what to do with the keys. And so, like, they find, like, an ancient guy's journal, and, like, they find, like, a symbol of, like a tree. They're like, oh, well, we know what to do with this. And so, like, they go to this church, and the church has, like, the same tree, like, on its sign by its front door. They're like, okay, this has got to be the place, right? And so they go through all this. And, I mean, this is, like, ancient buried treasure that nobody knows about. And so they take the two keys into the church, and they figure out where to stick the keys in the church to like climb in a thing. And there's two different directions that they can go. And so Marky Mark goes one way. And the other two people, Tom Holland and the gal that they're with for some reason, go another way. And so Tom Holland and the gal are climbing through like cobwebs and shit in this tunnel underneath a church. And they end up like accidentally being in like this crazy busy hopping nightclub where all the bad guys are.
Underneath the church?
Underneath the church that they needed keys to get into. Yeah, like they just went through the tunnel and ended up in this church or in this nightclub. And it made no sense. So
the bad guys just got to the nightclub by going through the nightclub door, but for Tom Holland, they had to go through an old ass tunnel to get there.
Yeah, yeah. And they kicked in a grate and then they were in this nightclub. And I was like, well, why are the bad guys in this nightclub if they're looking for treasure? And like, why is there a secret entrance from a church that you need special keys to get to? Because then like they were able to like find the next clue in the bar, but then the church doesn't mean anything. There was no reason to be in the church.
You didn't need the keys. You just had to figure out where the front door of the nightclub was.
Right. It was really stupid, Travis. I think that you can't think about it because, like, if you do think about it, it'll just make you mad.
I could see that.
Yeah. And everybody double crosses and triple crosses and quadruple crosses, but, like, then everything always works out. And then they're friends again, you know. Like, they keep double cross. It was like that Ryan Reynolds movie with The Rock and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Damn it. You know, because the whole time you're explaining this, that they have these keys and they need to go here and they need to go there. I'm like, what dumbass movie did I watch that was just like that? And I'm trying to think. I'm like, was it that Army of Thieves? I'm like, what is that? And now you just said it. I'm like, I think The Rock was in it. I'm like, no, it couldn't have been.
The bad guys Jumanji. Just always knew where to go.
Yeah,
but they didn't. Yeah. I mean, like, they weren't following them. They were there first in most cases. I mean, it wasn't like they tracked them there. Like, Tom Holland followed the map and did special stuff and wrote down coordinates that, like, he swallowed or something so that nobody would double cross him. And he ends up at the place, and all the bad guys are already there. So they already knew about it. So what'd you need the keys for in the maps that you had to steal?
Right. Yeah, that does remind me a lot of Red Notice.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
I mean, okay, you want to have a confrontation with the bad guy, just have the bad guys have followed them.
Right.
Just do that. Be like, we tracked you.
We tracked you because we knew you were going the right way.
Right. We knew you'd be here, and so now we're going to have a battle.
Nope. Bad guy's got to be there already. So that way, every time that Tom Holland and Marky Mark show up someplace, then they can be surprised that the bad guys are already there.
Yeah.
What?
What? This is weird.
Whoa, no! No, what are we gonna do?
I'm sure to know it's over.